go back to the Kleiner case. Mr. Allison?
May it please the Court, Benjamin Allison for the Conan Doyle Estate. There are two reasons the District Court decision in this matter should be reversed. And the first is that it was an advisory opinion. Mr. Klinger's entire action asks for advice on what the law would be on a hypothetical future state of facts if he finishes the book that he has started and if he finishes that book in a certain manner.
But didn't you tell him that if he went ahead with it, you were going to either sue him or tell Amazon and the other booksellers not to carry his book?
Yes, we did, Your Honor.
Why doesn't that threat create a genuine dispute between the parties and entitle him to seek declaratory relief so he doesn't spend a lot of money and find himself in court or the major booksellers won't carry his book?
Your Honor, the legal disagreement and the threat of action of some kind if the infringing book comes out is absolutely part of what's needed for a justiciable case or controversy, but it's not everything that's needed. And the rest of
what more do you need?
What more is, as the Supreme Court reiterated in MedImmune, immediacy and reality are the two standards. This court held in International
Heart. What's the problem with immediacy? Why is there an immediacy or a reality problem here?
Immediacy, I think, is the lesser problem. Reality is the bigger problem. The problem.
What do you mean by reality?
Reality requires that there be a finished work, the potential new work be presented to the court, and that it be fixed and final and definite. And the problem with a work that's fluid and indeterminate rather than finished and presented to the court is that if the action is filed and a work that's not yet finished is presented and the court expends its energy and renders a decision on it, and then it changes by the time the book is finished and published, we've all wasted our time. And that is why in International Harvester, the court faced
the
question.
Why would you have wasted your time? The suit would have determined whether this initial, his initial plan was a copyright violation or not. And if there are differences, then the question would be, well, had he made enough changes to escape the force of the first judgment?
Your Honor,
too many changes.
An advisory opinion can always be rendered, and essentially the effect of it would be to give
advice. But you put him in a terrible box because you make him do all this work and spend a lot of money, and without it having, in the face of your threats to sick Amazon on. And your argument is particularly odd because you have this mural example, right? Which is exactly the same point you make, right? You have to do this work in stages. You have this mural. You don't want someone copying the sketch of the mural. You want the remedy against that. So why doesn't he get the remedy?
Your Honor,
what's the difference?
The difference is that in International Harvester, the plaintiff...
No, this is not about International Harvester. This is about the difference between your mural example and Klinger's situation.
My mural example was intended to illustrate that Arthur Conan Doyle created his character over a long period of time.
Well, so Klinger maybe is creating his characters, his modifications of... Right. Holmes and Watson over some period of time, and he wants some protection, which is the exact same protection you want with your mural.
Exactly, Your Honor.
You want the person to be able to start the work, get the legal protection, before he's, you know, perfected the work and is ready to show it to the public.
It is a burden that the law requires that he essentially
bake
his pie.
Well, then I don't get your mural example, because you want the protection before the mural is finished.
Arthur Conan, maybe the mural is not...
That's your example.
Yes, it is.
You want to abandon it? Fine, you can abandon it.
Why don't we talk
about the copyright issue? I don't get your copyright point.
On the merits...
Once the copyright expires, the work is in the public domain. And if someone... And with it into the public domain go all the derivative works, if they haven't been separately copyrighted. So if someone wants, after the copyright, you know, he wants to...
He wants to
make a kid's book with mice and name the mice Watson and Holmes and so on. Why can't he do that?
Your Honor, even if it is possible in theory to separate protected and unprotected parts of the characters.
I mean, something goes into the public domain, right? Watson and Holmes are in the public domain. Anybody can do anything. Paint mustaches on them, turn them into, I don't know what.
Your Honor, let me respond to that with a case that Mr. Klinger relies on. It's the X1X case.
Not a case. Tell me how it is that after your copyright has expired, you still are able to exclude derivative works from that formerly copyrighted material.
Not all the copyrights have expired. Everyone agrees that there are 10 stories that are protected by copyright.
Sure, of course, and he can't do anything with the 10 stories,
okay.
Right?
And so
but Holmes and Watson exist in 46 other stories and a bunch of novels.
Correct.
So he can do, I should think, he could do anything he wants with characters in those books.
The way to approach it, Your Honor, when there are public domain stories and works with Sherlock Holmes partially created in them and copyrighted stories in which the characters are completed and fully revealed, is as follows. To describe the scope of the public domain character materials as first, then to describe and figure out the scope of the copyrighted character materials of the 10 stories. And it's not just a matter of now Sherlock likes dogs. There's an entire complex of emotion, of relationships, of change in his character.
I do not begin to understand what you're talking about. So, I mean, take the business with the two marriages of Watson. So, is that in one of the copyrighted works, still under copyright?
Yes.
Marriages? Okay. So that means that if Klinger wants to write a book of, you know, Sherlock Holmes stories, he can't refer to Watson having two marriages, right?
That's one example, but there are many other areas.
Who cares how many examples there are? The point is, if he takes stuff which were added in the 10 stories that are under copyright, then he's infringing. But as long as he confines his Holmes and Watson to the Holmes and Watson of the public domain materials, and he adds stuff to that or subtracts stuff which is not in the copyrighted works, then he's not infringing any copyright.
But here's another example, Your Honor. Hound of the Baskervilles is in the public domain. Mr. Klinger asks the court, give me a decision that I can make any derivative I want with Hound of the Baskervilles. So let's take an example.
Well, no, he can't make a derivative that's going to infringe any of the still copyrighted stories.
And that is why it is so important, as X1X said, to draw the scope of the...
No, but that's an issue if his stories infringe your 10 still copyrighted stories, then you sue him for infringement. As long as he sticks to the public domain characters and whatever changes he makes are not changes found in the copyrighted works, there's no infringement of anything.
Your Honor, Mr. Klinger's sole allegation in his complaint, there's one claim, and the claim is that an actual controversy exists between the plaintiff and the estate as to whether the publication of the new book infringes any copyright of the defendant. That is the case or controversy alleged in the complaint.
But going back to the first point, I don't understand how there can be infringement of characters in a public domain works.
In the example, if Your Honor would indulge me, Hound of the Baskervilles, let's make a movie version of it. It's in the public domain. Let's just take the dialogue from the book, make that the dialogue in the movie. Let's put a camera where the narrative is. But if Robert Downey Jr. plays Sherlock Holmes, he's so talented that without adding a word, just with his face, he could add emotions and relationship, friendship, that comes from the copyrighted stories. And that's
But if he does that, he's infringing.
And that is what
he will have to be cautious not to do that.
That is what this action asks for, Your Honor.
What do you mean the action asks for? Klinger can't ask for, he's not asking for the right to infringe any copyrights. He's asking for, he's trying to get you off his back by saying that public domain materials he can use and he can make whatever changes do not infringe. So maybe he can't sell a movie from, it has Robert Downey in it. Who knows? But that's for the future, right?
Your Honor is putting the finger on the infringement issue, and that is the justiciable issue. There is no action for invalidity of a copyright. The case or controversy, and the only possible one, is does the new book infringe? That cannot be decided in this matter because there's no work that's finished and fixed.
That's back to your first point. That's a separate point. If you put all your eggs in the no case or controversy, that would be one thing. But I'm that's one of your arguments. But you have a completely separate argument. It has nothing to do with that, which is that's the argument I don't even understand.
And the argument, I think the way to cut through it
suppose
is this.
He said he's going to write a book, and it's going to make no modifications in the character, in the public domain characters of Watson and Holmes. It's just going to have them investigate some other crime. But they're going to be the same people, you know.
Exactly, and that is what...
Does that violate anything? Does it? Yes or no?
If the...
Yes or no, and no ifs.
The answer is no, and if I can add a qualification, Your Honor, imported into the question the legal standard that it does not infringe any of the material about the character in the copyrighted stories. If it doesn't infringe, that's not a violation. But this action is like Mr. Klinger coming, saying, I have a book, it's behind my back, it's not yet done. Let me promise you, it doesn't infringe.
That's your first point. Your second point, which is much more ambitious, is about this completion of the character, and no one can use the character until he is completed, right? That's a very aggressive attempt to enlarge copyright law. That's your argument. Right?
Even if
there's no infringement in the conventional sense, until there are no more Conan Doyle stories about Sherlock Holmes and Watson, until then nobody can use those characters in any book or article or story, right? That's your second argument.
It is, and I would say, in theory, it may be possible to separate a protectable. In practice, it's not, because the fully developed Sherlock Holmes character has been revealed to the world since 1927 on display in movies and books and media and countless television. And while in theory there may be a writer in a cave somewhere who's never read the last 10 stories, doesn't know the real full Sherlock, in practice...
You mean anyone who has read those will then be ineligible to write about what happened before 1923?
I don't mean that ineligible, but it's very hard in practice
to
stay away.
But you're basically saying once you do those 10 stories, they incorporate, obviously they don't subtract everything out of what he was before 1923, and it seems to me what you would be doing is sucking in all of what is now in the public domain back into protected.
And I don't mean to do that, Your Honor. I just mean to say it's very hard in practice to kind of jam a hat down on Sherlock.
Well, you say you can't do it. I mean, that's, I don't know anything about Sherlock Holmes. I saw a movie once that said the young Sherlock Holmes. I think that must have been a real attempt to address what you're talking about. That's all before Sherlock Holmes.
I think, Your Honor, but what I would say is if Mr. Klinger thinks he can do it, then come in with a fully baked pie.
Well, give an example of what would be permitted on your view.
What would be permitted is to reprint a public domain story.
That's it? No modification possible?
If a modification does not intrude
into...
No
modification possible.
I'm not willing to say that in theory there's no modification possible.
All right, give me an example of a permissible modification.
An example would be turning The Hound of the Baskervilles into a movie in a way that truly did not
That is not a responsive answer. And forget the movie. You give me an example of a story modification, which you regard of one of the public domain materials that would not violate the copyright on the last
Your Honor, I can't give one because we haven't seen.
Yeah, because that's your position is that these subsequent copyrighted stories really took all these characters back out of the public domain and put them under your copyright. That's your position. Has no statutory basis, has no basis at all.
Your Honor, I'd like to suggest...
Destroy the public domain, or,
That my position is just that there's a lot more in the 10 stories than Mr. Klinger has acknowledged, and if I may, these three...
Mr. Allison...
Yes.
I'm trying to get a hold of your scope concept that you're offering, how does a future writer interpret what would be permissible? I guess it's a follow-on to Judge Posner's question from the copyrighted material. There are sketches, for example, contained in some of the copyrighted works.
Yes.
An alteration of the figure, of the literal appearance, would that be the kind of infringement you're concerned about?
Well, Your Honor, the sketches were not created by Arthur Conan Doyle, so they're not part of the estate's property. It would be taking the character.
Yeah, but that infuses. I mean, it's sort of adopted by the author.
Okay.
I assume when Doyle.
Well, but I have to say that the copyrights owned by the Conan Doyle estate are the literary works, not the sketches. But if Your Honor, X1X addressed this and said the way you figure this out is to figure out the scope of the public domain character materials, figure out the scope of the copyrighted character materials, and then figure out the scope of the new work and decide did it stick with the public domain or did it intrude into the copyrighted character materials, because the tendency, as Mr. Klinger says, just figure out the public domain. That's all I need you to do, because I can do anything
You're
with
not
the public
answering
domain.
This question.
Yeah. But as you described to me, at least, these global or circular concepts, it seems to me they tend to overlap. I don't know that, and if they do overlap, how can they ever meet the standard you're suggesting?
I am only here arguing for the protection of the law on the 10 copyrighted works and what they create. If it's hard to talk about Sherlock without intruding, that's not the fault of Arthur Conan Doyle.
No, I understand. But then your position is, once you're in Doyle's world, so to speak, can you ever extract comfortably without the fear that you've altered in some fashion the copyrighted material?
I don't know if in theory it's possible to do, but if Mr. Klinger brought a finished work and put it before the court, said,
"That's
here's,
your first
here's my
point. You are not responding to this to Judge Fong."
I was.
You cannot get. You then, seem totally unable to give an example of a lawful, work using Holmes or Watson That wasn't simply a reproduction of the non-copyrighted early stories. If you could give us an example, maybe we'd understand.
With Your Honor's indulgence.
You want to reserve everything. And in fact, you're creating what would be an irresistible temptation for any copyright owner to keep publishing variants of his original work in order to perpetuate the copyright on those original works.
And
that's the game that's being played here.
Arthur Conan Doyle has finished. He's passed away. His work is done. There's no more creation of the character by Conan Doyle. But I'm going to be bold and press on, because if Mr. Klinger brought a real book, this court would look at it and say,
"You're back
this
to
much
your
is,
first point. Now but, you're still the, not giving us an example
but the guy,
of
the
a
guy
work did, that modifies the character that was in the early stories and yet does not infringe the later stories."
I am trying to answer that question, and a question that Judge Flom raised about guidance is that real work could give the public and other writers guidance.
I asked you a very specific question. You refused to answer it, which is to give me an example of a Sherlock Holmes, current work that would vary the original characters in some way, but would not violate the copyrights in the 10 later stories.
It would be to.
If you can't give me an example, I just can't accept your argument.
It would be to create a new story using Sherlock Holmes and to stay away from the emotions that he developed and that were developing through his life from the copyrighted stories, from the relationships that he had that changed and matured, from his maturity, from his warmth, going from a colder person to a warmer person. That's in the cup. If you stay away from those things, stay away from his attitude toward new technologies, stay away. And we tried, without having a book in front of us, we tried to say what you would need to stay away from as best we could. It's hard when there's not a real case here and a pie that's baked and presented and said, here's
my work. On the contrary, if all you want to say is this is what you have to stay away from, you don't have to know anything about what he wants to do. You just tell him, these are the limits. You can't have the two marriages. You can't have this, that, and the other. But you can have everything else.
But that would be an advisory opinion.
That's your first point. Yeah. I'd like you to acknowledge that they can make any variations he wants in the original characters of Watson and Holmes, as long as he doesn't infringe the works that are still under copyright.
Your Honor, I do acknowledge that in theory they can make any derivative they want as long as it doesn't infringe, and that infringement is very difficult.
Let me try just
avoid
one more time, Mr. Allison, so I try to get a hold of it. Yeah. Suppose someone wanted to suggest not altering the time frame of Doyle's copyrighted work, that Holmes was a spy, a traitor to the empire. Would that be in any way? I'm trying to get an example,
yeah,
so that we could increase our dialogue here, especially with the court now. Would that be something so alien to what Doyle had in mind that it would be infringing the copyright?
Your Honor is raising a story with a totally different plot. Totally
right.
Different. Now, it's pretty easy to stay away from the plot lines in the 10 copyrighted stories.
Right.
It's harder to stay away from the character. Because
that's exactly right.
And so if the character in this new story about Sherlock Holmes is a traitor to the empire, if the character shows that friendship, those emotions, the warmth, all of those things, then we'd still have an infringement question.
That's I think I understand,
yeah,
your position. Then, well, so
and
really, any alteration of what is commonly received as Doyle's caricature that he has created, to say that he had polio as a child or something, it would be violative. So that's my concern, that it's so hard to envision, and I suspect that's why you're having a problem with the response to Judge Posner, what tweaking would be allowed?
Tweaking that would not intrude into the scope of those, and that's why it's so important to get what is the scope of the copyrighted stuff, because it's tempting to take the public domain character materials and say, okay, I can go anywhere with these because they're public domain. Not true. As Judge Posner said, you can't go into the copy, but that is the familiar track that the world knows as Sherlock Holmes, and that is the temptation of a writer to go in that direction, and that's the direction that one can't go. And the issue, this is all much easier to decide if there's a real book that's here for with a real case or controversy, and then we can get an experts, we can say what's the infringement,
well,
what's
what
not
infringement.
What if someone
wrote a story which said that Holmes and Watson were homosexuals?
What about a new story that said that?
No.
Would that be infringement? Your Honor, I don't know of anything in the copyrighted 10 stories that would prohibit that. But the issues that are the character development and formation that is in those stories, I've indicated. It's those that inner life. It's a whole complex of internal growth, maturity, emotion that's in the copyrighted works.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary.
And we'll hear from Mr. Kirsch.
May it please the Court, Jonathan Kirsch, Law Offices of Jonathan Kirsch, for the appellee, Leslie Klinger. If the Conan Doyle estate had said at the outset what its counsel seems to have said a few moments ago, we would not be in this courtroom. Mr. Klinger proposed to do a second book of new and original stories. One book was already published, in which these characters would be featured in new stories written by prominent contemporary authors, and declared his intention to restrict those stories to materials appearing in the 50 Sherlock Holmes works, which even appellant concedes are now in the public domain. If appellant had said, as long as you respect that boundary and do not copy elements of the 10 stories, Mr. Klinger could have proceeded with publication, there would have been no lawsuit, and I would not be here today. That's not what the appellant did. The appellant made no such distinction. In fact, the appellant's core argument is that although the appellant concedes that the character was sufficiently delineated to merit copyright protection in 1887, that somehow that character was not completed and revealed, concepts that are alien to copyright law, until the post-23 stories, and declared its intention unequivocally in the most real and immediate possible terms to keep Mr. Klinger's book out of print. And in fact, succeeded in doing so. Pegasus Press, which was prepared to sign a contract for this book, backed down in the face of this threat by the Conan Doyle estate, which, as we pointed out in our brief, is the business model of the Conan Doyle estate. Appellant plays on the fog of uncertainty that it has succeeded in erecting around the copyright issues, such that producers and motion picture companies and television networks are willing to pay a licensing fee rather than bear the burden of a lawsuit, which Mr. Klinger chose to do. Nothing could be realer or more immediate. I also should point out that what Mr. Klinger sought in his lawsuit was not a declaratory judgment as to whether a particular book was infringing or non-infringing. The prayer for relief, which was granted by the district court, asked for a declaratory judgment that anything contained in the first 50 Sherlock Holmes works, the pre-23 works, is now in the public domain and is available for use by the public, including Mr. Klinger, and that anything in the 10 stories is not. If that judgment is upheld, Mr. Klinger can persuade his publisher, who had backed down under the threat issued by the Conan Doyle estate, he can proceed to publish the book. We are not asking for an advisory opinion. We're asking for a complete and final resolution of this actual controversy as to the public domain status of the pre-23 works.
How many copies does Klinger sell? You say there's this previous. He's done this before. Are these very popular? Or?
Well, I wish I had within my personal knowledge his book sales. I don't. He has written a three-volume collection, annotated collection, which has been a bestseller. Annotations of all published
works. Oh, he's the author of the annotated volume?
Yes, he is.
Many footnotes, yeah.
I don't know what the sales figures were for the first book of new and original stories, but I think that the reality here is that he was not able to test the market for the second volume because his publisher yielded to the, what I would suggest is a bullying tactic by the appellant, and backed down from publishing. The estate also availed itself of a reality in the book publishing business, which is that it is in such precarious straits economically that few publishers are willing to bear the burden of a licensing fee, and no publisher would be willing to test, as Mr. Klinger has chosen to test, the legal merits of the position that the Conan Doyle estate has taken, which means that as a practical matter, as a real and immediate matter, all the estate has to do is give a DMCA takedown notice to Amazon, and that book or any book will be gone. They don't have to go to the trouble of filing a suit. They don't have to go to the trouble of asking for a TRO. They can get a self-help remedy because Amazon will not make available a book that's under threat of litigation. If this court grants the relief that the estate is seeking, that is to say, this case is dismissed for lack of jurisdiction and Mr. Klinger is thrown back into this fog of uncertainty, the publishing industry, his publisher, is thrown back into the fog of uncertainty, then they will have won, they will have prevailed on what I suggest is a very ungenerous and, you might even say, malign business model.
Could you have sued for tortious interference?
We have not. We have sued for one thing.
No,
and
I'm
one
saying, could you sue for tortious interference?
Oh, yes. We could have. Or
with the Amazon.
Or for copyright abuse. There are a number of cases. And, Your Honor, a decision was made, because Mr. Klinger is an individual of limited means, to streamline this case and not to pile it up with issues that would require intensive discovery or intensive litigation. By way of example, we chose to file in this district to avoid a motion for change of venue in Central District of California, where Mr. Klinger resides. We did everything we could to get an accelerated resolution of this fog of uncertainty that is at the heart of the appellant's business model. That's why we're here in Chicago today. And we would ask for one thing, that you affirm the jurisdiction of the court to hear this case, and that you affirm or decide de novo that it was correctly decided. By the way, if I may prevail upon the patience of the court, the Warner versus X1X case, which appellant seems to want to emphasize, states, and I am quoting, where a work has gone into the public domain, it does in fact follow that any individual is entitled to develop that work in new ways, and as a general proposition, the public is not limited to solely making exact replicas of public domain materials, but rather is free to use public domain material in new ways, i.e. to make derivative works by adding to and recombining elements of the public domain materials. That's to be found in the case upon which appellant is relying.
I appreciate your policy argument that you just made, but is it fair to say that In the Company of Sherlock Holmes is a sequel to A Study in Sherlock?
It's a sequel, but it's not a derivative work.
No. I mean, okay. Well, if it's a sequel, should the estate presume, since there was an agreement that the predecessor book fell, or at least you agreed to, for I don't know the circumstances with the Random House issue, but is it fair to say that they are just following up, exercising a right that, that Mr. Klinger recognized in the earlier work, which is precedes what is now called a sequel?
Well, Your Honor, since the appellant has thrown everything against the wall that it thinks it will stick and has not thrown that against the wall, I presume that they don't think that's a meritorious argument. But my answer to that argument is very simple.
Well, I mean, your suggestion is that the estate will just do anything to stop any yeah. interpretation of the original copyrighted work. And I'm just saying, do we have here a situation where there's sort of a recognition by author Klinger that by way of his not bringing the suit you have here now at the time of a study in Sherlock?
Well, the license that was purchased from the estate was a license that permitted the use of the 10 stories, which we agree and readily agree requires licensing. So the license was purchased to provide Mr. Klinger's authors and contributors, these are not stories that he writes himself, he's the editor of that volume,
right.
to give them a broader turf on which to work in creating their own new stories. The second volume in that series will be all new works by new contributors, and Mr. Klinger has declared his willingness and his intention to confine himself and his contributors to stories that draw on public domain materials. That's why we're in court today. We believe, the appellee believes, that the time has come for the court to put an end to the business model that disadvantages the public, that extends copyright impermissibly and contrary to copyright jurisprudence by making a very simple, clear, fundamental declaration that what's in the public domain is well and truly in the public domain and is available for any individual to use.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So your time has expired, Mr. Allison. We'll give you another minute to think further.
Thank you, Your Honor. There's something going on in this case, which is that Mr. Klinger comes to court and says, I'm going to write a book. It's not going to infringe. Tell me, give me a judgment that it is non-infringing.
That is not what he is asking for.
Well, Your Honor,
He wants a declaration that he can use material from the first 50 stories and books, but he can't infringe the 10 works that are still under copyright.
Your Honor, Mr. Klinger, with his first book, said the same thing. This book is not going to touch the 10 stories. I don't need a license.
Well, if he did, then you sue for infringement. There's no problem. If he does that again, you can sue him again.
And it did, and in this case, we said it did, and he agreed in the record.
Okay, so what does that have to do with going forward? All right, he knows you'll sue him, so he'll be careful not to infringe the 10 copyrighted works.
What it has to do with going forward is that, in theory, you can separate portions, strands, threads of a character,
but
in practice...
whenever you argue all that in theory stuff, it becomes clear that what you're trying to do is just tie anybody in knots who wants to write a Sherlock Holmes story so you can get your license fee from that person. Because everything's so vague, and you keep waving your arms around, you draw big circles, right?
Your Honor, it is Mr. Klinger who decided to use characters created by someone else that are still partially formed
That's
and protected
in copyright. That's the question, whether any part of them is still copyrighted.
Correct.
That's the question, not the answer.
Correct. And the case...
And you have such a vague notion of what is copyrighted in these 10 stories with your arms waving and drawing huge circles that it's clear you're trying to intimidate anybody who writes a Sherlock Holmes story. You don't mind they're doing that. You want a license fee anytime Sherlock Holmes is going to be mentioned in a new book.
Mr. Klinger, his counsel, talks about a fog of uncertainty.
That is your position.
Your Honor, the facts of the creation of the character are not... It wasn't wrong for Arthur Conan Doyle to create
the character he created. But there would be no fog of uncertainty if a new book was brought by Mr. Klinger.
Okay, that's your first point.
And if
that's
I may, Your Honor, the case in that addresses...
That's your mural point. That's your anti-mural point.
The court would. The case in which someone takes a legal disagreement and says, look, we're going to have the ultimate issue, but there's a legal issue there that we need a judgment on, and asks for a declaratory judgment on that question, short of the ultimate controversy of infringement, is Calderon against Ashmus. And the Supreme Court said...
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Allison.
Thank you, Your Honor. Fritch.